Good evening, everyone. We're going to start in another minute.
Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's journey through the Seder. We know it's just 2 weeks to Pesach, under 2 weeks to Pesach, and the purpose of tonight is to give some more meaning to the Seder experience, and at the same time also to run through what to do, how to do, when to do it. We're going to have to move quickly because there's a lot to cover. There's a whole Seder, so obviously it takes a bit of time. We'll offer some insights, try to spice it up a bit and give your Seder some extra depth. But if you have any questions along the way, practical questions or any questions, just put them in the chat and towards the end we'll try and answer them, or if they come up, our lady will monitor the questions and bring them up and so on. Now, tonight we're going to go through the whole Seder very quickly. With the understanding that everyone is in a different stage of the journey, and that's okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to point out the sort of the very, very main parts. We'll try to cover everything, but we'll point out what is really critical and what is really very, very important for actually making the Seder a proper Seder, halachically, spiritually, and a real Seder experience. Let's just begin by saying the following, that the Seder is an extremely holy experience. The Zohar says that when the Jews sit down to the Seder, the Zohar says, at that moment, Hashem gathers his whole entourage, all the angels of the higher worlds. And he says to them, look, let's come and listen in, where the Jews are expressing gratitude and saying praise and thanking Hashem for the exodus of Egypt, experiencing their own Seder, experiencing their own journey through freedom. And Hashem and all the malachim, all the angels, come and listen to the Seder that we go through. So it's a very, very holy moment. The Seder has tremendous holy energy to it, tremendous sanctity to it. It's also a personal experience. I think the basis of the Seder is that we're not just coming to sit down to remember something that happened over 3,300 years ago. But we're re-experiencing it, and we're going out of our own Egypt, and we're trying to achieve a certain level of personal freedom, personal spiritual exodus. And that energy is tapped into primarily on the Seder night by doing two things. First of all, by speaking, discussing, and telling the story. In fact, the word Pesach comes from two words. The commentaries point out, Pesach, a mouth that says, a mouth that speaks. It's very important to communicate to ourselves, to communicate to the next generation. In fact, the whole Seder is structured around communicating to children and so on. So it's through communication, and it's through the mitzvot, the action, the behaviors. God gave us certain actions, and those actions are holy if we do them correctly. And when we do them, we perform them, observe them, we tap into that holiness, that sanctity of the Seder. Now, of course, the Seder has many, many customs and many, many things that go with it. But the four mitzvot that are critically important on the Seder night, which make up the mitzvot of the Seder, besides all the very important customs and the very important nuances and so on. The four mitzvot are the four cups of wine, the eating of the shmura matzah, the eating of maror, a bit of herbs or lettuce, and saying the Haggadah. So let's jump right into it. Before we actually go to the Seder, I just want to point out and remind everyone, of course, that Pesach has two parts to it. There's the preparation for Pesach, it's getting rid of the chametz and being prepared for Pesach, and then there's actually the experience of Pesach itself, which is the Seder experience. I mentioned that because, just a reminder, for those who haven't done it yet, on Pesach, we're supposed to stay away from chametz, not only not to eat it, not to benefit from it, but not even to own it. And that's why what we do is we put all the chametz away and we sell it to a non-Jew. So the way it's done is you can get on any form and on Binah emails and other emails, just fill in the form and send it into the office. And the rabbi, on behalf of everyone, will sell the chametz. And normally the non-Jew is prepared to sell it back after Pesach, so we buy it back. But that's to be done before Pesach. Okay, let's jump right into the Seder. Now, before we start, let me just point that we're going to be saying pages. Although if you have a different Haggadah, that's fine. But this is the Haggadah we're going to be using. That's the family Haggadah from Art Scroll. There's a new version with this cover. It's the same pages, I believe. And we'll use that if you've got it handy. We'll go through that particular Haggadah. So, of course, the Seder doesn't just happen. We need to, of course, make preparations for the Seder. All the preparations can be done before Pesach, can be done in the afternoon. The only thing that can't be done early is the actual Seder. So we begin Kiddush only when nightfall happens, different to other Shabbats where we can actually bring in Shabbos early. But on Pesach now, we actually have to start Kiddush at the right time, which is when it gets dark, which is approximately around 6 p.m. on the first night of Seder. And then the same thing goes the second night, a little bit after 6. But the preparations, of course, is, and I want to just jump into this very quickly, is we set up the Seder plate. Seder plate, you can see a picture of it and the instructions on page 18 of the Haggadah. Essentially, there's the Seder plate has 10 components. There's the three matzot, preferably three shmura matzah, the round hand-baked, old traditional ones. The plate itself, which is part of the 10 components. And then the six items that go on the Seder plate, which is the zera, the shank bone, or like some people use a chicken neck, roasted, the hard-boiled egg, the maror, the bitter herbs, or the horseradish lettuce combination, haroset, which is ground nuts mixed with a bit of wine, a bit of apple, karpas, a vegetable, which can be, some people use an onion, some people use parsley, some people use a potato, cooked potato that is, that's fine as long as it's a vegetable, and then a second set of the lettuce horseradish combination to be used for the matzah sandwich later on. Just very briefly to give an insight in that, we see there are 10 things there. So we know that the 10 powers of the soul are made up in a certain, they have a certain structure to them. We have 10 powers of the soul, which resemble and represent the 10 powers with which God created the world. Three layers of intellect, chokhmah, bina, and daat, and that's the three matzahs. We have the six emotions, which is chesed, gevura, tiferet, and so on, six primary emotions of the soul, which are the six items of the Seder. And then the final 10th one is Malchut. Malchut means the part of us that is able to absorb and internalize our cognition and our emotion and process it and then implement it. And that's what we call Malchut, and that's the plate which absorbs everything else, the actual Seder plate. So that's 10 components for the 10 powers of the soul. The idea is that when we sit down to the Seder and we're going to try and not just remember but experience certain spiritual growth and try and go out of our own inhibitions, our own incarceration, our own prison, our own mitzrayim, we're going to try to do so with every part of our being. We're going to try and grow, not just part of us, but every part of us has to grow on Pesach. Our cognition, our emotion, our behavior, everything has to be affected and impacted upon by the Seder, and that's hinted in the Seder plate, which is the 10 components, representing the 10 components of the soul. Okay. Now, the Seder we know has a certain order to it. It starts with Kadesh or Rechatz, on page 20. Page 19. You can see there's 15 steps of the Seder, Kadesh, Rechatz, and so on. We'll explain each step as we go along. But the first thing is Kiddush. Now, let me just explain the technicalities of this. So Kiddush, we make Kiddush every Friday night and every Chag. But of course, on Pesach night, the Kiddush is very different because it becomes one of the four cups of wine. So here's a good time just to talk about the mitzvah of the four cups of wine. It's a really important mitzvah to drink the four cups of wine. When I say wine, it could be grape juice too. It's preferable if it has some alcohol content. It doesn't have to be. can be grape juice, and that's fine. Now, people find it very overwhelming to drink 4 cups of wine, but that's because people take cups which are too big and drink too much in the beginning and don't have the planning, sort of planning ahead. So here's a practical, if you do the mitzvah properly, here's a practical way of doing it. Get yourself a cup, because whatever cup you have, you're supposed to put it to the top. Get yourself a cup that is just the right amount. So it just has to be at least 90 mils. If it's 90 mils, you're good to go. 90 mils, 100 mils, those are very small cups. And also, every time you drink one of the cups during the Seder, some people are trying to drink the whole cup. You don't have to. It could be just a little bit more than half, 51%. So all in total, it's about 200. You drink like 51 mils each time. It's about 200 mils in total. Not terrible. So that's how the mitzvah is. Now, the difference between, therefore, because kiddush is one of the 4 cups of wine, therefore, of course, it's not good enough only for one person to make kiddush. I mean, one person can still make kiddush, but every person has to have their own personal cup, because the mitzvah of drinking 4 cups of wine is every person to be able to drink those 4 cups of wine. So just to give us a little bit, so kiddush is on page 20, 21. Just to give us a little bit of insight into the kiddush, I hand you over to Rabbi Levi, who will explain a little bit about the kiddush.
So I'm going to give insight into the 4 cups of wine in general, which obviously the kiddush begins that. So my father mentioned before that a key component of the Seder experience is the concept of communication. The Zohar says, actually, that the exile in Egypt spiritually was an exile on their dibur, on their speech. And the reason for that is because the concept of communication, specifically speaking to God, is the idea of going out of oneself and connecting to a higher being. And when one is trapped in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, which is, represents the idea of a person feeling trapped and sort of unable to go out of oneself, then they can't communicate properly. They can't properly talk to God. They can't properly connect to a higher being. So it's explained that in order to speak, you speak in letters, obviously, and we pronounce letters using 5 different parts of our mouth. So we use each letter, sort of, we use a different part. So some letters we use our lips more, some letters we use our teeth, some letters we use the palate, the tongue, and the throat. So there's 5 different parts of the person's mouth. So it says that the teeth that we use for the matzah, we need strong teeth, because you have to crunch a lot of matzah. But the other 4 are represented by the 4 cups of wine. So the 4 cups of wine plus the matzah, which we eat later, represent the 5 different ways which we pronounce letters, which represents that when we went out of Egypt, we then became effective communicators. We were able to properly go out of ourselves and talk to God and talk to someone else in a real way, that we're able to go out of ourselves, that we're not trapped within our own Egypt, within our own Mitzrayim anymore. And that's one of the interpretations of the 4 cups of wine.
Oh, that's beautiful. Moving along then, again, if anyone has any questions, please put it in the chat. So the next stage of the Seder is Uruchatz. We go and wash our hands. Now, in many families, this is not the washing before eating matzah. This is a second washing, meaning the first washing, because on Seder night, we wash twice. And this time we wash our hands without making a bracha. So in some families, everyone washes at this point. Some families, only one person washes. But that's fine. Whatever the custom is, that's okay. One of the reasons that we do all this is we want to make a change, because we're about to eat a vegetable, which I'll explain in a minute. But the washing can be done either by one person or every member of the family. I just want to share with you a short insight on that. Everything in the Seder, every nuance has such deep meaning. Now, we know that often, if we want to absorb a certain level of holiness, the way it normally works is we need to get rid of toxicity first. We need to get rid of our negativity first. And when we get rid of our impurity and we get rid of our negative aspects that we may have, then we become a vehicle, become able to accept and to absorb a level of holiness. However, the Pesach night Seder, we are told, is so unbelievably powerful. And it's a gift from God, that God, just like in the time of Egypt, revealed himself and redeemed the Jewish nation. Every Pesach night when we sit down to the Seder, God begins he kickstarts the process. He gives us a gift of holiness, whether we are ready or we not. And then we take it and we work with it, right? So that's why you know, the song goes Kadesh Urchatz. Obviously, it's just meant as a sign. Kadesh Yomei Kiddush Urchatz, you go wash your hands. But also means something very deep. That on this night, Kadesh, we can become holy first, and only then Urchatz do we have to wash ourselves. Washing our hands is a symbol of getting rid of impurity. Normally, you have to wash first, but tonight we Kadesh, we get holy first, and then we get rid of our negative things. Now, after we wash, we take a piece of vegetable. And here the idea is karpas, which again is on page 22 at the bottom. You'll see the instructions. Each person gets a little bit of a vegetable. It's supposed to be a small piece, not a big piece. A small piece of potato, parsley, whatever you use for karpas, dipped into salt water. We take that piece of vegetable and we make a blessing, borei pri ha'adama. We make borei pri ha'adama. And halachically, when we make borei pri ha'adama, we have in mind that that blessing should also be for the maror, which we're going to eat later, the lettuce and the horseradish. So we make that bracha and then we eat it. Now, why do we do this? So just to explain it on a very basic level, first of all, we know that on Pesach night, the structure of the Seder table is around children and children asking questions. Therefore, we stimulate questions and we stimulate curiosity by doing strange things. The child knows, the child is used to that. Normally when you make Kiddush on a Chag, you go and wash, you wash for the meal. You start eating bread and you eat the full meal. Tonight, for some reason, we wash and then we go have a vegetable. And the vegetable is out of order. It's not part of the meal. We're only going to eat later. So therefore, the child asks questions. So therefore, the main minhag, the main custom of karpas, is to stimulate curiosity so the child should ask questions. There's some, however, I'll just share with you two very short, deep ideas behind the karpas, and it goes like this. First of all, the vegetable, again, Pesach night is a certain gift that's given to us from God, a gift of inner freedom, a gift of the ability to grow, even if we're not ready. Vegetables grow in the ground. So therefore, the idea is that a vegetable is normally something that is very low down. It's covered by the ground, or at least grows from the ground. Pesach night, that little inexpensive vegetable, although fruits and vegetables are not so inexpensive anymore, but this little inexpensive vegetable becomes part of the Seder table, showing us that even if we think that we're stuck in the ground, even if we think we're very low, Pesach night, we can become part of the Seder, we can become part of the experience. I'll just very quickly share with you a insight about the dippings that we dip in the salt water. One reason of salt water, of course, is because it represents the tears. We know that tears are salty, represents the tears of the Jewish people the way they were in Egypt. But here's a quick little interesting insight coming from one of the Mojitzer Rebbes, and explain the follows. The following. He said the following. On Pesach night, we know we dip twice. Dip the vegetable into salt water. Later on in the Seder, we dip the lettuce into the charoset, the nuts and the apples and all that. He said this is symbolizes two dippings that happened throughout the journey, the historic journey of the exile and exodus from Egypt. How did the Jews go into Egypt in the first place? It all began with the sale of Joseph, when the brothers were in conflict. They were divided. They were not united. And they sold Joseph into slavery and then wanted to tell a story to Yaakov, the father. So they dipped his shirt, the colored shirt of Joseph, into blood and gave it to Yaakov and said, we think we found this. It belongs to Joseph. He might have been devoured by a wild animal. That was a dipping of disunity. It was a dipping of that caused the exile, caused the Jews to go into Egypt in the first place. When it came time for the Jews to leave Egypt, God said to Moses, tell the Jewish people that they have to gather on the night before they leave. They have to bring the Paschal lamb and they have to put the blood on the doorpost, as the famous story goes. But if you look at the nuances and the details, it says they should take a bunch, agudat ezov, a bunch of hyssop plants. Hyssop is a sort of plant. They should take a bunch of these hyssop plants together, dip it in the blood, and then post it on the doorpost, and God will know which house is the Jewish house to skip it over when the plague of the firstborn happens. Why was God telling him to do that? Because God said to Moses, the Jews went into Egypt because of a dipping of conflict. They dipped Joseph's shirt into blood. Now when they go out of Egypt, Exodus and redemption can only come with unity. And therefore, you have to take a bunch of plants together, put them together, make a bunch, representing and symbolizing unity and dipping it in the blood. That was the unity that got them out of Egypt. Similarly, when we sit down to the Seder, we also do two dippings. The first one is the karpas, the vegetable. The vegetable is called karpas, coming from the same word as Joseph's shirt, ktonet pasim. Pasim and karpas, a similar word, a colored shirt that we dip the first time to remember the reason that we were in exile to begin with, to remember the destruction that disunity causes, conflict causes, division causes. And then later on, we remember how we go out of Egypt. How do we go out of Egypt? When we support each other, inspire each other, and unite with each other. When we take a bunch of lettuce leaves together and dip them in the charoset. So these two dippings that we do on the Seder night represent the two dippings, one before the exile and one before the Exodus. So that's the karpas. Now we move on, and then we take the middle matzah. So there's three matzahs on the Seder table. We come to yachatz. At this point in the Seder, we take the middle matzah and we break it into two. We put away the middle half for later for the afikoman. In some families, they steal it, and this is the big ransom that the parents have to offer big prizes to get it back. Some families don't do that. Whatever the case is, it's just put away. And what's left on the Seder table is the two whole matzahs, the top and the bottom, and the middle matzah, which is now broken. I'm just going to leave it to Rabbi Levi to give us a bit of insight into that.
Just a short idea on yachatz when we break the matzahs. So the whole experience of the Seder, of course, is to not only remember the exodus from Egypt, but to experience our own exodus, to go out of our own limitations, to go out of our own sort of spiritual places where we're trapped, that we feel like we can't grow. So a lot of the Seder is centered around how we should grow and sort of things which help us grow. A prerequisite to growth is to realize that you're missing something. If a person thinks they have everything, then I have nowhere to grow. And if a person thinks that they're okay all by themselves and they don't need anyone else, then they definitely cannot grow. The idea of yachatz is to break the matzah, to represent that there has to be a certain feeling of brokenness. When we come to the experience of Yitziat Mitzrayim, of going out of Egypt, we need to come to God and say, without you, I'm broken. Without you, I don't really have any ability to get out of myself. I need your help. I need other people's help. I need God's help to schlep me out of my out of all the places where I feel trapped. That's one of the symbolisms of breaking the middle matzah.
Okay, so now we come to the main part of the actual Seder, the telling of the story. So I didn't mention before, but yachatz, the breaking of the matzah, if you want the instructions, is on top of page 24 in the Oshkol Haggadah. And now we come to the part of the Seder night called Magid. Magid means to tell, like Haggadah. This is the part of the Seder where we're supposed to fulfill the mitzvah of telling the story. Incidentally, you can do it in Hebrew, you can do it in English, you can do it in any language you want, as long as you have some understanding what's going on. The idea is to communicate the story. Now, obviously, preferably, if one can, one should recite the entire Haggadah. However, it's a long Haggadah, and I know not everyone is up to that. So I am going to point out the key parts, the most important parts, so to speak, in order to fulfill this mitzvah properly. Again, I'm pointing out the main parts, not to suggest that one should only do them. One should try to do as much as one can. But I want to just, if one wants to at least do the minimum of the Seder to fulfill the mitzvah of the Seder, I'll point out sort of the main parts and also some of the traditional parts that people always sing. It might not be critical halachically, but it's nice because it's what people are familiar with. So it begins on page 24, and I'll point out some of the parts and we'll mention the pages. One of the key parts of the Seder is the Manishtana. The reason is because the structure of the mitzvah, it's a beautiful idea, the structure of the mitzvah of telling the story of the Exodus on Pesach night is not just to lecture our children, but to have them ask, to stimulate questions. The idea is to tell the story in response to a question. In fact, not only does children have to ask the question, but in fact, even if someone were stuck in a Seder alone, right, even alone, as unfortunately happened 2 years ago with lockdown, right? You still need to recite the Manishtana, because even if you're asking the question and answering it to yourself, it still needs to be in a question-answer format. But of course, the way it's done when there's children is obviously get a child to do it. In some families, all children recite it. In some families, only one child recites it. That's fine. Doesn't matter. You can do half-half. As long as someone recites the Manishtana and asks the question, so there can be an answer. Now, of course, the Manishtana is structured around the things that we do differently on Pesach night. One of the ideas of why this is structured in a way of question and answer is because growth can only really come when there's questions. Questions are good things, not questions where you ask just to challenge, but questions we ask to inquire, to know, to learn, to grow. We should ask questions. We should explore. We should always want to know more. And that's what the Seder is all about. Seder is about that what I grew, the amount that I grew last year is good for last year. But that was last year's redemption, last year's exodus. But last year's exodus is this year's Egypt. Because it's become part of my comfort zone. So I need to explore what is there more that I can do? What questions can I ask to get new answers? And that's what the Manishtana is all about. So the Manishtana is a very important part of the Seder, really critical. Again, page 24, get someone to ask the four questions. Doesn't make a difference which language. In some communities, they do it in different languages. That's all good as long as the questions are asked. Now, another critical part of the Seder, of the Haggadah, is the next paragraph, which is on page 26 or 27 in English. And that's the Avadim Hayinu. Avadim Hayinu is the paragraph that just sets the tone. It tells us that we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt and that God took us out. And that and how important it is to recognize that. Again, if you're not able to do every part of the Haggadah, this is an important paragraph to do. Avadim Hayinu, it can be read in English, but it encapsulates the story in one brief sentence, really, and sort of helps us fulfill that mitzvah. For a bit of insight, Rabbi Levi.
On Avadim Hayinu, yeah. So there's a line in Avadim Hayinu, which we say over there that even if you're very wise and you're very knowledgeable, you also need to tell the story. And that's a very important line, because the idea of going out of ourselves, of going out of the places where we feel trapped and growing spiritually, it doesn't actually matter where you're holding spiritually. A person could be a very, very knowledgeable, a great Torah scholar, extremely observant, but they can still be trapped. It's not about where you are, it's about are you growing? And then that's really why we say this paragraph at the beginning of the whole story, because it sets the tone for the experience of going out of our own Mitzrayim, of our own limitations, that we need to know that wherever we're holding, no matter how high it is, if we stay there, we're even more trapped than someone who's quote-unquote on a lower level, but is growing. So the most important thing is that we constantly challenge ourselves, we constantly go out of ourselves, and we continue to grow, and that's that line in the paragraph of Avadim Hayinu.
Excellent. Just I wanted to, before we continue, I just missed out a few things, which I want to just clarify. First of all, after the Manishtana, when we're about to say this Avadim Hayinu paragraph, that's when we fill up the second cup. So again, everyone should have a cup in front of them, just like by Kiddush. We filled up the first cup before Kiddush and we drank it after Kiddush. After the Manishtana, we fill up the second cup. We do that and we uncover the matzah. So there should be matzah on the table from the three matzahs. Now it's 2.5 because we've broken one off. Part of the reason why we have a broken matzah, by the way, is because matzah is also referred to as lechem oni, poor man's bread. Not in a negative sense. The Maharal of Prague, the great philosopher, explains that poor man is in a good sense, which means we let go of everything that we have. We let go of self. So we just surrender to God. It's part of the great humility experience of the Seder night. So we have the matzah, we uncover the matzah, we fill up the cup of wine. Once again, just to remember that the wine should always be full, because it's called a kos shel bracha, a cup of blessing. We don't want half measure blessings, we want full blessings. So the cup is always full. So when we fill up the cup, we fill it till the top. Again, it could be grape juice if that works better. Again, small cups, doesn't have to be big cups, at least 90 mils, but small cups is fine. 90 mil cups is fine, 100 mil cups is fine. And then we start the Haggadah. Now, just one other thing about the Avadim Hayinu that we just talked about. There's an interesting little nuance in the paragraph that we were slaves to Egypt and God took us out, which creates a theme for the Haggadah, really. And the theme is that we don't just talk about the Exodus. We also talk about the slavery. Talmud tells us we always begin with the negative and then we end with what happened to positive. It's important to know for many reasons, but it's important to know in the context of gratitude. We only really appreciate the Exodus if we understand how bad the slavery was. We also need to know where we came from. Each in our own journey of Exodus, we need to know the negative, where we're coming from, because sometimes where we come from, even the negative part, we're able to use as a process of learning. We're able to use it to make us stronger. The Exodus becomes stronger if we remember the slavery and use that slavery or whatever that slavery represents in order to become a stronger person in order to grow. Therefore, in the very first paragraph, we do both things. We don't just say, tonight we thank God for being free. No, we say, Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves and God has taken us out. Okay, moving along, I just want to make mention. Now, the next thing, I wouldn't say halachically, it's the most critical part of the Haggadah, but nevertheless, it's a very famous part. I'm just pointing it out. And that's the four sons. That's on page 28. The four children, the four sons that are at the Seder, which famously are known as the wise one, the wicked one, the simple one, and the one that doesn't even know how to ask questions. And we talk about the questions and responses that we give them. One, of course, the fundamentals of that is that it doesn't matter which child it is. Everyone is at the Seder table. Everyone can get something out of the Seder. Everyone can experience Exodus. Because at the end of the day, they're all part of one community. It might be at different levels. The wise son needs a Seder. The wicked son could be by the Seder, is welcomed at the Seder. The simple one and the one that can't ask questions. The Baba Chereba once pointed out, however, says there's a fifth son, famous fifth son. The fifth son is the one that doesn't even make it to the Seder, unfortunately. So before Pesach, we need to make sure. A son doesn't only mean a child that's young. It could mean anyone. So it's really important before the Seder. If we know people that might not even connect to a Seder, to try and connect them, to get the matzah, to welcome them to a Seder, to invite them, and so on and so forth. Okay. Another very important paragraph of the Seder is at the bottom of page 30. The Hisha Amda. The Hisha Amda, we talk about God's promise. At that point, by the way, we say the Hisha Amda, it is this that has stood by our fathers and us. An important, relevant paragraph. We actually then cover the matzah and we pick up the wine. We don't drink it. We just pick up the wine and we say or sing the Hisha Amda. The Hisha Amda, the Hisha Amda. Right? Everyone has their own tune. So we say the paragraph, the Hisha Amda. And we say a very important thing, and it's an important thing to be conscious of, because unfortunately it's so relevant. We say that it's not just one person that tried to annihilate us. B'chol dor v'dor, every single generation, omdim aleinu, they rise up against us to try and destroy us. And God helps us and he saves us. So it's not just about Pharaoh in Egypt, but it's about every generation. But as the commentaries explain, that the Jewish continuity, the Jewish eternity is guaranteed. God will never let that disappear. It's up to us to make a choice to be part of it and to make sure that we are an active part of that eternity. Because when the Haggadah says that whole door by door, every generation are standing up against us, it doesn't only mean physically. It's not only referring to physical persecution. It's also referring to spiritual persecution, spiritual assimilation, spiritual threats, spiritual distorted values and so on and so forth that are threatening the very, very essence of our Jewishness. And that's something to be aware of. In our times, unfortunately, we see both happening. We see parts of the world where Jews are in physical danger. But for the most part, Jews have freedom of religion. But it doesn't mean that they're not standing up against us. The winds of assimilation, the winds of spiritual threats are as strong as ever. And we make note of that by the Seder. But we also say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God gives us the power to overcome that and to be saved from that. We just need to be part of that. We just need to put in the effort. So that's that little paragraph over there. Now I want to move. After that, we go through the whole. After we finish Vish Amda, we put down the cup. We uncover the matzot again. And then we tell the story. For pages and pages, we just tell the story, quoting different verses, however much you can say. I'm talking about now from page, from the top of page 32, all the way to page 38. Again, whatever you're able to say, it's good. Everyone should do their best. Make special mention of somewhere where you can stop and just pay special attention to, which is the 10 plagues. The 10 plagues is on 38, page 38. When we list the 10 plagues that God brought upon the Egyptians as a preparation for the Exodus, the blood, the frogs, and so on and so forth. There is a custom that when we say the 10 plagues, we pour out a bit of wine, or some people do with their finger. When we finish doing that, then we throw out that wine and then we refill the cups to make sure it's full. Can we have a little bit insight on the 10 plagues?
All right. So the number 10 is actually very significant. God could have brought 15 plagues or two. Why 10? So we know the number 10 in two other places. The number 10, God created the world, it says, with 10 utterances, asara ma'morois, sort of with 10 sayings. And of course, after the story of the Exodus of Egypt, God gave us the Ten Commandments within which the entire Torah was given to us. So the world was created with the number 10. We were given the Torah with the number 10 because the purpose of the Torah is to elevate the world, which was created with that 10. And the preparation for the giving of the Torah was this whole experience of being in Egypt and then breaking that impurity of Egypt again with the number 10. So you see that sort of symmetry of the 10 create the 10 utterances creating the world, breaking the impurity of the world with the number 10, followed by the tools and the message which elevates the world, which is the 10 commandments.
Okay, thank you. Another very famous part of the Haggadah, which is worth mentioning, and also encapsulates in summary form a lot of the praises and thank you and gratitude that we show towards God, is the song Dayenu. So Dayenu, as we know, is a 15-step song. It's the middle of page 40, where we sort of say, you know, if God had taken us out of Egypt, but not sort of punished the Egyptians, that would have been enough. And if he would have done this and not done that, it would have been enough. But we thank him for doing everything. So it's in the middle of it. It's a nice song to sing together. Try not to get stuck only in the first sentence. Try to finish all 15 sentences or say it in English. Middle of page 40, Ilu Hatzianu. Rabbi Levi, a bit of insight there?
So Dayenu is very powerful, actually. It's really the concept of gratitude and appreciating everything that God does for us. Because the whole message is that if you would have only done this and not this, then it would have been enough. How much more so that you did both? But just to point out that some of them actually seem even very sort of very insignificant. For example, we say that if God would have taken us out, if God would have split the sea, but not taken us out on dry land, that would have been enough. Which the obvious question all the commentaries ask on that: what's the point of splitting the sea if he didn't take us through on dry land? And the explanation is that what we're saying is that if God had split the sea and taken us through, but it would have been a little bit muddy, that would have been enough. In other words, it wouldn't have been dry land. How much more so that God performed a miracle besides the splitting of the sea, the ground was actually 100% dry. It was a very sort of pleasant walk, which if you think about it, is very insignificant. If you sort of put the imagery in your mind, the Egyptians are running behind the Jewish people trying to kill them, the sea splits and the Jewish people escape on the other side. Yet they notice that not only this tremendous miracle happened, but they even noticed almost an insignificant detail that it wasn't muddy, but it was dry, which, yeah, makes them more comfortable. But when you're running for your life, I mean, you don't really notice those things. But nevertheless, they noticed it, and we thank Hashem for even that insignificant detail, and which is a very powerful lesson. When we want to go out of Mitzrayim, our own Egypt, a big part of that is the concept of gratitude, realizing the blessings that God gives us in our life. And even things that may seem a little bit insignificant and not such a big deal, we have to pay attention to them and thank Hashem for them as well.
Okay, so now we come to a very important part of the Haggadah. As I said, you know, if we're not able to do everything, at least the important parts we should try and do. And it's page 42 or 43 in English, the second to last paragraph. We say that Rabban Gamliel, one of the great sages, explained that one of the things you need to talk about and elaborate on the Seder night are the three key important mitzvot of Seder night: Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. Now, Pesach refers to the Paschal lamb, which we don't have today. We just have the shank bone or the chicken neck to remind us of it. But nevertheless, we still have to learn about it. And that's the talking about the Korban Pesach, the Paschal lamb that was brought on the day before Pesach and was eaten by the Seder in temple times. And in fact, as I said before, was brought by the Jewish people when they were still in Egypt. The night before they left Egypt was a night that they had a Seder, and they brought that morning or that afternoon, they brought the Korban Pesach, the Paschal lamb, and then they ate it together with matzah and maror. So we talk about the Pesach, and you'll see those paragraphs, one that starts with the word Pesach, where we explain it. Matzah is the next one, page 44. We talk about why we eat matzah, because the Jews didn't have time to bake bread and so on, and therefore didn't rise. And maror, because we remember the bitter times, remember the slavery that we experienced during our time in Egypt. And then we conclude at the bottom of page 44 with a very important paragraph, which says, "B'chol dor v'dor, in every generation, we are obligated to see ourselves as if we ourselves have gone out of Egypt." Because that's the point of the Seder. The point of the Seder is to understand that it's our own experience, that every Pesach, we have to tap into the energy of growth, the energy of freeing ourselves from ourselves, the energy of being able to go and take the next step beyond our comfort zone, to go out of our own Mitzrayim and to take some spiritual step that we haven't taken before as a sign, as an experience of our own exodus. That's something we do, and we try to do especially every single Pesach. So just going back to these three things, we have Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Pesach was the Paschal lamb. It was a sign. It was the one mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people before they left Egypt, to take a lamb. Now, it's interesting that the lamb, the sheep itself in Egypt, in the pagan culture of Egypt, was a deity. It was an idol. They served the lamb. I think a comparison today would be in India. There's some people that have a pagan culture of serving, worshipping cows. But in Egypt, they worshipped the lamb. And that was the very lamb that God said that they have to be able to take and transform and let go of the pagan worship practices that we're involved in and turn over a new leaf and become part of God's nation. That was the whole process of Korban Pesach. But together with the Paschal lamb, they had to eat matzah and maror. Matzah is a sign of freedom. Maror is a sign of slavery. Why do we eat those two things, and we eat them both, or we used to eat them both together with the Korban Pesach? Tonight we eat it after we go and wash. The idea being that growth has to include everything in our lives, as we said before. Growth is not just the good parts. Growth, it means that we use every opportunity, that every part of our life becomes part of the journey of growth. Now, we know that in our own lives, not always do we grow. Sometimes not always are we successful. Sometimes we regress. Sometimes we fail. But that's okay too, because we can turn failure, we can turn regression into the journey of growth. We learn from it. We use it as an opportunity. We become stronger. We build the inner spiritual resilience of being able to bounce back and become even stronger than before. That's why it's not only the matzah on Pesach now, which is so important, which is a symbol of freedom, but it's also the maror, the bitter herbs, because we have to include those parts of our life also to become part of the journey of the personal freedom and personal exodus. Okay, now, that kind of sort of ends the Haggadah, but then we end off with, on page 46, we then cover the matzah, and then we, on Pesach night, we say Hallel, we praise God. We split it into two. Part of it is before the meal, part of it is after the meal. So on 46, we have two paragraphs there, Hallelujah, and Betzeit Yisrael, where we start talking, we praise God, and then we end off with a blessing, as you see at the bottom of page 46, Baruch Atah Hashem. We end off with a blessing of thanking God for bringing us to this night. And then we make a second blessing, Borei Pri Hagafen. At this point, we then drink the second cup of wine. Once again, everyone should drink a cup of wine. Everyone should drink just a bit more than half of the cup at least. And that's the second mitzvah, the second cup, which is completed at this point. Now comes, again, an incredibly important part of the Seder. I know at this point, everyone is really hungry, can't wait for the meal. But we've got a few important things to take care of first. So at this point, we have Rochza, which is page 48, where we now go and wash our hands with a blessing in preparation for eating the matzah. And then we come and we make the blessing on the matzah. We make two blessings. One is Motzi, bottom of page 48, as we would do on every piece of bread, Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz. And on top of the page 50, we have the special one we make on the matzah, and then we eat matzah. Now, this is one of the highlights of Seder night. I cannot stress enough how important this matzah is, but it's really important to do it properly and to fulfill the mitzvah accurately. So, what has to happen is as follows. The mitzvah is, now we eat matzah a few times during Pesach night. Right, we eat matzah at this point, we eat matzah with the matzah sandwich, we eat matzah for the afikoman. And let me just say this, if someone really can't do all the matzahs properly, at least to do it once, because at least to fulfill this very, very important mitzvah of matzah at least once on the Pesach night. How is it performed? So first of all, each person should receive a sizable piece of shmura matzah. It needs to be shmura matzah. If you don't have any shmura matzah and you're not getting any from your own shul, please reach out to me and I will arrange you to get some shmura matzah. But it's important to have enough. It doesn't need to be from the Seder plate necessarily. Of course, the one leading the Seder should make the blessing and take a piece from the middle matzah and the top matzah. but it needs to be done in a way where each person that's sitting around the Seder, and I know in some Seders it could be 20 people, 30 people, 40 people, so have more in the box or get extra before Pesach, each person should get a bit more than a quarter of a round Shmura Matzah. So that's basically the amount. A bit more than a quarter of the round Shmura Matzah. Preferably a third of a Shmura Matzah, but if not, at least a bit more. And needs to be eaten fairly quickly within a few minutes. So that's how we do the mitzvah. It sounds like a very technical, sort of boring exercise, but that's part of the point where we just surrender to what we're supposed to be doing and to eat a piece of the matzah, to have in mind that when we're eating the matzah, we are remembering this amazing experience of going out of Egypt. That's how we do the matzah. Now, again, it's at least once on Seder night, preferably the first time, to at least have one kazait, as we call it, a third of a shmura matzah, or at least a quarter, a bit more than a quarter of a shmura matzah, to at least eat that and eat it, swallow it all down within, let's say, 6 minutes, which is not hard. It's only a third of a matzah. Well, it can be done. You have to have good teeth a little bit, but it should be okay. But as I say, I cannot emphasize enough how important that mitzvah is. Now, just on a spiritual level, I mean, on a very basic level, it's the action that counts. It's the actual eating of the matzah. The Zohar says that the matzah is michlad dimhemnutza. It's bread of faith. Every Jew, we all have faith. We all have intrinsic in our soul. We all have the faith in God. But sometimes it's not so much in our consciousness. It's not so much in the forefront of our minds all the time. The Zohar says when we eat matzah, matzah is called bread of faith. It's actually like we're eating faith. We are spiritually infusing ourselves with greater faith. That Shmura Matzah that is baked specially for the mitzvah has tremendous spiritual power and blessing. The Zohar says on the second night particularly that matzah is called Michlada Asvata. It brings healing. It brings blessing. It brings amazing things. And it's really, really an important mitzvah. So please make sure that everyone has enough Shmura Matzah to go around the table at least once each night to eat a big piece of Shmura Matzah. Now, there's so much written on the mitzvah of matzah. I'm just going to share with you one or two little insights. We know that the word for matzah in Hebrew is mem tzadik hei, three letters. It's not a lot of rise. Rise, bread that rises, is called chametz. Chametz on Pesach is a big no-no. But chametz, as we know, has very similar letters. Chet, mem tzadik. The mem tzadik is the identical letters. Both chametz and matzah have a mem and a tzadik. The only difference is that matzah is a hey and chametz is a chet. Now, if you know the shapes of the Hebrew letters, chet and hey are almost identical. The difference is that hey has a little opening on the left-hand side. So there's a top line, a line on the right, a line on the right, a line on the left, and a chet, both sidelines are connected to the top. The hey, the left leg, has a little opening on the top left-hand corner. So there's two ideas I want to share with you with regard to that. One is that the idea of chametz, we know, is the idea of ego. Ego traps a person. Ego is what holds us back from growing, from going out of our personal Egypt. Matzah is humility. Letting go of the ego allows us to advance, allows us to go beyond ourselves, allows us to connect to something higher, allows us to connect to each other, makes space for others, and makes space for God. But ego is a very dangerous thing. And therefore, we show that even a trace of ego, even a little bit of ego, that's the difference between the chet and the hay, is the whole difference. So therefore, even a little bit, it can't rise. Matzah is the symbol of complete surrender of our ego. That's what matzah is. That's why even a little bit counts. But a little bit of a deep idea is this. The chet, one of the things that ego does to people is even when they fail, they just cannot face up to it, cannot own their failures, because they have to always be perfect. So what happens is ego self-destructs a person. And the shape of a chet is the shape of someone who's totally trapped in themselves. What happens at the end of the day is they fall out the bottom. It's total failure and total self-destruction. The hay is also shaped very similar. It also has an open bottom. It also shows someone that can fail. Failing is not a problem. Making a mistake is not a problem. But the hay represents the person who fails, but is big enough and humble enough to climb in through the top window. There's an opening in the way back. There's a way back and saying, no, I made a mistake, but I can learn from it. I can crawl in through the top left-hand window because I can reconnect, because I'm humble enough to say, I made a mistake, It doesn't mean I'm a bad person. I still have a soul. I can learn from the mistake. I can become stronger. And that's the shape of the hay. So that's just a little bit of something to think about when you eat the matzah on Pesach night. Once again, at this point, we give every person a piece of matzah. We make the blessings, the two blessings, and each person eats their matzah. And with eating the matzah, are able to fulfill a beautiful mitzvah, the mitzvah of matzah.
There's been a question.
Yeah.
What is the reason why part of halal is said before the meal?
Okay, so this is a big discussion in the Gemara itself. Essentially, because two reasons, I'll just share quickly. One is halachic thing was actually the exodus of Egypt took place in two stages. One was they were redeemed, they were free intrinsically, they were given the gift of freedom at midnight by the plague of the firstborns, but in fact, they only geographically only left the next morning. So that's why also it's got to do with the two stages of the redemption. Another deeper reason is that Pesach night, we actually don't only talk about the exodus of Egypt, but part of the Seder, particularly the second half of the Seder, is actually a celebration in anticipation for the future redemption, the redemption through Mashiach. And that's why we split the Hallel. The first part of the Hallel is thanking God for the redemption from Egypt. That's why we say, B'tzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim. The second part of Hallel after the benching is more about the coming of Mashiach, which will be in the future.
There's been another question. Do I understand correctly that it is not necessary for all attendees to have a small piece of the covered matzah, but instead have matzah from a box?
That is correct. So the matzah has to be on the table. The person leading the Seder makes the blessing on the 2.5 matzahs, whatever the case is. But it is not necessary for everyone to partake of that matzah. More important, everyone can be from the box to get a sizable piece of matzah, as I described before, and eat it. It's not necessary to come from that, from those three matzah, from the covered matzah. That is correct. Okay, when we finish the mitzvah of matzah, we then go to the next mitzvah of the night, which is eating the maror, the bitter herbs. I'll just explain how that mitzvah is done. The bitter herbs are not necessarily bitter as such, although they are a little bit, because there are two ingredients that can be used, and the minhag, the custom, is to combine them. And that is some horseradish with some lettuce, preferably kos lettuce. Now, again, there's a certain measurement that we have to eat here as well. Every person should receive, let's say, a big piece of kos lettuce with a bit of horseradish, like a large size of, right, with a bit of horseradish as well. Mix it together. We dip it into the charoset, and then we make a special blessing, which is in the middle of page 50, al-achilat maror, and everyone should eat that combination of the lettuce and horseradish, and that is fulfilling the mitzvah of the bitter herbs. Rabbi Levi?
So the interesting thing that the commentaries point out, the matzah is to remember the freedom, because when we left Egypt, wasn't enough time for the bread to rise. The maror is the bitterness, which is to remember the slavery. So if you think about it, it should be the opposite order. We should eat maror first and then matzah, because the slavery happened, of course, before the freedom. Many, many answers to this question. One beautiful answer that I saw is that one of the ideas of Pesach is the concept that the Jewish people became intrinsically free, which means that we are from the moment of midnight on Pesach night, when we became intrinsically free, even if after that we would go into other exiles, which we did, and suffer further persecution, even throughout all of that, we remain intrinsically in the depths of our soul, we still remain free people. And that's the idea of having the maror after the matzah, because the maror after the matzah is not only to remember the bitterness of the slavery of Egypt, but it's also to remember the bitterness that happens after we left Egypt, but to tell us that even though we, after the redemption, we're going to suffer more maror, we're going to suffer more bitterness and more persecution, nevertheless, Pesach is still here because we're still free people. The Jewish people are eternal and we're intrinsically free. And that's why the maror comes after the matzah.
Okay. The next part is korech, the matzah sandwich. Now, this is a custom which we do, and it's a halachic idea which we do on Pesach night, to remember the way the Korban Pesach used to be eaten, according to the great sage Hillel, where it used to go all together. The matzah and maror were eaten together. And in fact, some people say that the way to do the mitzvah maror today is to do it together with the matzah. So at this point, we take again piece of matzah, the lettuce and horseradish combination, and we make a sandwich. Now again, we should do this, but if a person just cannot stomach any more matzah, or just very, very hard for them, or will affect them badly health-wise, then it's not as important as the first matzah. First matzah is critical, that's the mitzvah of matzah, but we should do this if we can. We put the matzah together with the maror, again, dip it into the charoset, and then we say the paragraph at the bottom of page 50, that this is what Hillel used to do, he used to put Pesach, matzah, and maror together, and we eat it, and then we eat it. Now, I forgot to mention a very important part. I don't know why this slipped my mind completely. When we drink the four cups of wine, and we eat the matzah, the men particularly need to lean to the left. And lean to the left means to lean on something. It could be just on the other chair, on an arm of the chair, on a table, anything, but needs to lean. When we eat the maror, we do not lean. When we eat the korech, we do lean. So the korech, we lean is one of the ways to do the mitzvah. And I just wanted to mention that because I forgot to mention before by the wine, we definitely should lean. The men particularly need to lean to the left. It's a mitzvah for the men. It's not for the, it's too, we don't have the time to go into the whole history of why men yes and women not. When you want to lean, they can, but it's not an obligation. Obligation is for the men to lean. Okay. Once we have finished the matzah sandwich, we are now ready for the meal. And it's at this point where some people have a custom. It's not obligatory, and I laugh about this every single year. I know some people think this is the most important part of the Seder, but it's definitely not obligatory. And at this point, some people eat the egg and eat the egg with salt water. Just a custom. The egg is on the Seder plate. There's many reasons why we have an egg. Part of the reason is because in times of temple times, there were actually two sacrifices that were brought that day. One was the Paschal lamb, one was a special festival, korban, whatever the case is. We have the there's many, many other symbolisms behind the egg, which I'll share in a moment. But the egg just has to be on the Seder plate. It's not critical that it's eaten. Though the custom is that it is eaten, and either one can eat the egg that's on the Seder plate. Sometimes people bring other eggs to the table, and people eat eggs and salt water. It's not obligatory. If you're just too full and still want room for some other of the food that's going to be served, it's not necessary, but it's a custom, and you could do it, and it's nice. One of the ideas of an egg, I'll just point out, is an interesting little concept said by the Ishbitzer. An egg is a very interesting idea. An egg is a food that when it's laid, and when egg is laid, it is something, it's ready. It's a ready to eat thing, meaning you can take an egg, you can make a fried egg, you can make a hard-boiled egg, it's ready to eat. On the other hand, it's really not. The definition of an egg is something which still has to hatch. It still has to become something else. It still has to become a chicken, right? So on the one hand, it is already something that can be used. It's functional, but its purpose really is to become something else. And that's why when the Jews left Egypt, the Exodus was an amazing celebration, but it's not complete. The ultimate is to get to the ultimate redemption through Moshiach. But that's the same is true with our own Exodus. Every time we experience personal freedom, when we experience a personal Pesach, whatever we're able to go beyond our comfort zone and grow, that is an amazing celebration. That doesn't mean that we still have no room to grow. We still have more to do. We still have more to grow, just like the egg. So we eat the egg on Pesach night. Remember that concept, that what we achieve with Pesach is an amazing thing. It's like the egg is ready to eat, but there's still a chicken to come. There's still more to grow in coming days and in coming years. So we eat the egg, and then after the egg, we have the meal, relax. We can have the meal. We can, whatever it is, have gefilte fish and soup and then chicken and all good things. And then we finish up the meal. When we finish up the meal, the Seder is definitely not over. However, it's at this point that everyone starts to get tired. And now the challenge really begins, a good challenge. So if you've come this far, don't give up. It might be a bit late, might be a little bit bored and impatient, but now's the time to really make sure we finish up the job. So we come to, before we bench, before we say Birkat HaMazon, we do what's called Safun, which is page 52, where we eat the Afikoman. It might be at the stage in some families, we've got to ransom it out from those that have hidden it and promise the world to them for showing you where it is, or you just take it out from what you've been doing and we eat the Afikoman. Again, we eat after common to remember how the Jews ate the piece of the Korban Pesach, a piece of the lamb at the end of the meal. If you really just can't, you can't, but one should try eat a piece of matzah for the afikoman before we bench. Just to understand a little bit, Rabbi Levi, over to you.
So the term for the afikoman at this stage of the Seder is called safun, which means hidden. The reason is because we hide the afikoman. But actually, this is a very spiritual part of the Seder, because as we mentioned a few times already, the concept of the Seder is to experience this freedom. And this freedom is intrinsic. And it's very, very deep within us. It's in a place which many times is kept hidden. It's the hidden part of the neshama, the hidden part of the soul, our very essence, our very identity. And the whole experience of the Seder is to reveal the hidden parts of our soul, the deepest parts of ourself, which is intrinsically free, which can transcend all the external parts of ourselves, which sometimes we feel is enslaved. And that's the experience of this step called safun.
Okay, so we eat the afikoman, now we're ready to say Birkat HaMazon, to bench. It's at this point that we give back everyone their cup, and we fill up the third cup of wine. We then bench together, sing the benching, whatever we do, follow the Haggadah, say the special parts for Pesach, for Yontif. And then we finish benching, which is on page 62. We make the blessing over wine for the third time, and we drink the third cup of wine, which is the third of the four cups of wine. At this point, we then have a special part of the Seder. We open up the door, what we call the open up door for Eliyahu HaNavi. We have a tradition. We first of all fill up a cup in the middle of the table, a cup of wine that no one's going to drink from. It's a cup of wine only for Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet. We have a tradition that Elijah the prophet visits the Seder of the Jewish people on Pesach night. He is the one that will herald in the future redemption. He is the Malach, the angel, the human being, the prophet actually became an angel, so to speak, which is a symbol of freedom. We also open the doors as a symbol of God's protection, because the Pesach night is called Leil Shimurim. It's a night of protection. And we ask God to remove our enemies, to herald in the redemption. And we are taught that moment that we open the door is considered a very, very auspicious moment. It's at that moment that we are taught that we should pray to God, our own silent prayer as well, to be able to really connect to him, to be able to, all the blessings that we need, but particularly blessings of spiritual success and spiritual progress. That is the moment. It's a very holy moment of the Seder when we open up the door and we say that paragraph called Shvoch HaMatcha, which is towards the end of page 62. When we finish that, we make sure that the fourth cup, the fourth cup we do before we open up the, we fill up a cup for the Yohan Aviv. We also fill up our own fourth cup. We should have a fourth cup filled at this point. And then we say Hallel. Hallel is praise to God. We can sing the songs. We can say it, whatever the case is. You say as much as we can. But the Hallel begins on page 64 and ends all the way on page 76. Again, you know, say in English, say as much as you can, but try say a bit of Hallel. And when we finished Hallel, we make the fourth blessing, Borei Pri HaGafen, and we drink the fourth cup of wine. When we drink the fourth cup of wine, we then make the after bracha. And if you have a look on page 78, we then proclaim the Shana Haba Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. And we know and we trust that at this point, we've done whatever we can to experience that freedom, to go through the Seder as much as we possibly can, and hopefully God has accepted our Seder. Now, in many, many Haggadot, including the Ashkel one, at this point, page 78 onwards, there's many songs, some famous songs, like, Achad Miyadeya and Achad Gadya and all that. It's nice. If you have that custom, it's beautiful, and you can sing it along, sing as much as you want. It's not critical. It's not the obligatory part of the Seder at all. It is custom for many people. And if you slap to it, keep singing. And sing songs of the Haggadah and celebrate the fact that we were able to perform the mitzvot and connect to God and connect to this chain starting all the way from 3,300 years ago. Every single year, never without fail, Seder has been observed in the Jewish people. It's time for our Jewishness to really shine and connect. The statistics are that Seder is one of the most observed things in the Jewish nation. And the reason for that is because it's the time that the soul is ignited and the soul comes out. Everyone wants to do it. It's just beautiful to be able to do it correctly and do it in a way that we really connect to the holiness of it in a proper way. I will just mention one final thing. I mean, we just shared a few insights tonight and we shared a few manuals sort of how to do it correctly. But the more we know, the more meaningful it is. If you can, over the next week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever the case is, look up online, the Shirim, there's plenty of stuff around to learn more about the Haggadah, learn more insights. Also, I would suggest to everyone that's really important to prepare things for the kids, to get the kids involved as much as possible. Prepare quizzes, prepare games. Some people buy now these little, little things for the 10 plagues that you put all over the table to get people engaged. Whatever you can do, whatever questions you can ask, whatever quizzes you can have, discussions you can have around the Seder. What we did tonight, just the best skeleton of what the Seder is, but take your time, engage people, particularly maybe by the meal, if you're hungry, so maybe go a bit faster and then get to the meal, and then do it during the meal. But the more we can engage everyone, the better, of course, it is. I also just want to mention, of course, we talked about the Seder night. One of the mitzvot, of course, on every Friday night and every Pesach, Yom Tov night, is lighting of the candles, a very beautiful mitzvah. This Pesach starts on Friday night, so it's really important to light candles on time, which is at 5:15. 5:15 is candle lighting, the first night of Pesach. Although, as I said before, we cannot make kiddush until 6, but 5:15 is the correct time to light candles. The Seder table should be adorned with a beautiful festival lights. The second night Pesach, we also light candles from an existing flame, which needs to be done after 6:09. That's the second night of Pesach, so that's also an important mitzvah on the two nights of Pesach. So I want to take this opportunity to wish everyone we call it a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, a meaningful and really, really good Pesach, a kosher and happy Pesach. We should all be able to connect to the power of the Seder, the power of the great mitzvot of Pesach night. We should all be able to experience our own personal freedom and personal growth. And that connection generates tremendous blessing, hopefully for ourselves, for our families, for Am Yisrael. We're in a time this year, particularly where the world, I think in general, the Jewish nation in particular, is in need of great blessing. And hopefully the preparation and the commitment to keep the Seder in its proper way will bring the tremendous bracha and Chag Sameach to everyone.
Excellent, everyone.